Reading from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Chapter 7, Text 60. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Evam vasantaram nitva nijam svasvayatum vacha yadutam balaramena stutva bhavantaram gata. Sri Parikshit said, Balaram spoke these words to change his younger brother's ecstatic mood and bring him back to normal. Indeed, upon hearing what Balaram said, Krishna did change his mood. Commentary. Before hearing these words, Krishna was swimming in the prema ras of the most confidential loving dealing, but now he was in a heroic mood. Thus, in the next verse, Parikshit will refer to him as Bhagavan. Om Jnana Chimarangasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Kaksurunavitam Yena Tadmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vairagya Yudvati Risham Tiyatnai Apayama Manajitya Mandam Kupam Vriya Paraduka Duki Sanatanisham Prabhamasriyami Mancha Kaupa Taru Vyashta Kripa Sindhu Vaivasha Patitanam Bhavane Bhyo Vaishnavedyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Bhor Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, today I'm going to give a little introduction. There's a few things that happened that I do want to share with you. Where do we start? Well, because I spoke about Carl and Stella's listening in Davenport, Iowa, many of you must know that are on the Sangha call. So he's a English professor, and he brought some students from Iowa, mostly ladies. And when they first came, I don't know, I just looked at them, and I wasn't kind of impressed. You know, I don't, you know, Henry will understand this. So, you know, they were wearing really jeans and T-shirts. And, you know, I wasn't impressed at all. But the transformatory powers of Vrindavan are so powerful. It was really nice. I have, some people know, Chris knows if he's listening, and Stacia, John of I have so many people are coming to Vrindavan. I've kind of chosen this one lady to help me, and she's just incredibly dynamic, you know? I don't know, today they all came to my class. Ah, beautiful. All in saris, flowers in their hair, you know, Punjabi dresses, and bright. You know, brilliant, effulgent faces. You know, they went on the Jamuna for a boat ride and to Madan Mohan, and they went and they bought off these clothes. But it was just so nice. And then, you know, they came down and it was, they saw me the first day. They came to, I took them the first day to, I took them on a walk Steve Forrest and Dobbin. It's great when they first came. So Carl, you know, you want the margins crack. Anybody want to go? It's after they've been out all day long. Every single person came to my class, everyone. And what did they come for? You know, they came about 15 minutes before it ended for the kirtan. And everyone was chanting from their heart. And I was watching Carl sitting in the back in tears, actually, just watching all these, you know, wonderful students just, this is not a conversion trip at all, you know? It's not like that. It's just part of the cultural experience. But how much they're just relishing Vrindavan. And then I spoke to them for about a half hour, right after my class, on what is yoga, what is dharma, and any questions, can you tell us a Krishna Leela? You know? So I have a way of explaining Krishna Leela. And they were like on the edge of their seat, listening to Krishna Leela. And just with so much faith means what? Faith is what you think is good. Your faith is in what delights you. Like someone with no faith. You can imagine if someone with no faith, how much they would have hated that a Hare Krishna is up there speaking about Krishna Leela. Right? With faith. They have faith. It's definitely Shraddha. And they were listening with faith. I got really appreciated. You know? That was the question. Could you tell us some Krishna Leela? Well, this ain't New York. This is west of the Hudson. And it's not even New Jersey. This is Iowa. This is the Midwest. And this is a Catholic university, one of the three universities that's connected directly to the Vatican. You know, so it was really nice to see their appreciation. And of course, my presentation, and it's true, I stress this over and over again, that everyone may have a particular allegiance to a particular faith and therefore think that their line is best. Otherwise, why are they in that line, right? I do. I feel that about Gaudiya Vaishnavism. I feel that about it coming through Prabhupada. You know, that's my faith. And that's my allegiance. But I also stress, too, that substance is more important than allegiance. And I let the people know that. And that's the way I feel. You know, I may have this faith, but substance. And what's substance? Substance is where your heart is filled with love. And if a person is from whatever tradition and their heart is filled with love, they're better than a person who has a better allegiance but less love. And I was speaking in this way. And I'm sincere about it. And therefore, although it was Catholic-oriented, they can definitely appreciate what I was saying and the orientation and the prejudices I put out before them, before I spoke. This is my faith and that. But in that way, they could hear in a very, very nice way and appreciate some of the points that I was making about what is religion. You know, and through the Kaliya Leela, what is the egotistical consciousness and how, when one has false ego, they cannot hear. I said, you can go to church every Sunday and hear the Bible, right? You're hearing the instructions, but how much have you assimilated? Why? Because you are filtering it through your ego as your frame of reference. You may have the best religion in the world, but if you filter it through your frame of reference, it won't come out as surrender to God. Until that false ego is diminished. And that's the story of Kaliya. When all the hoods of the serpent, when all the hoods of the serpent were finally crushed, representing the false ego, then schmitza. Then they can remember what they've been hearing all the time from their lives about the glories of Krishna, and about the glories of surrendering to Krishna, and about the glories of the experience of doing so, which is prema. They were hearing, but couldn't access. It doesn't matter what allegiance you have. And this is the fault of every religion. They think allegiance is not enough. I'm Christian. I give my life to Christ. I'm better than everybody else. I'm ISKCON. You know, I'm linked up with better than everyone else. I'm Hindu, whatever it is. Yes, have faith in the allegiance. But if you haven't given up the false ego, the mercy and instructions of that allegiance are not actually manifesting in your heart. Because you don't want to hear surrender to Krishna. And that's why a person who has full faith in Sharanagata, in the shelter of a relationship with God, who fills his heart with love, one who actually has full faith in that, has a condition of the mind that allows them to experience spiritual phenomena fully and immediately. Like Narada, when he took prasada, all his sins were gone. Is that going to happen to us? By eating 35 rasgullas at the Sunday feast? Are you a Mahabhagavat now and purified? And if you do eat 35 rasgullas at the Sunday feast, I wonder how much faith you have in Mahaprasad that you think you have to eat so much to get the benefit. It's hard for me to give a class here because Carl is just hysterical, laughing, rolling with every joke. And, you know, to New Yorkers, Carl and myself actually graduated from the same university. He just was a couple of years after me. We're both colonials. I may not be able to continue here, Carl. What? I was speaking in that way, and therefore they were appreciating that I was speaking substance, not allegiance. And therefore, they could hear Krishna Lila in a neutral way and appreciate what it had to offer. And some of them have faith. I mean, who do? Even the guy was in a dhoti. The girls put on saris, he put on a dhoti. And I'll tell you, a dhoti does not look as good as a sari. When a lady puts on a sari, she looks more beautiful. Now, unless a man is very expert, when he puts on a dhoti, it doesn't enhance his image. I don't know, me and Carl had this right here. Sorry. We just made, it's just too much here. You can't be serious for a second. Well, I haven't seen Carl for a while, so we're really having a blast here. But he was sitting in the back in the corner in the room downstairs. There's other people there also that stayed. And he was just so relishing. Just how much these people who took this Bhagavad Gita class were just so open to hear. Yeah. So that was one thing, and this was a very enlivening thing also. It took them to churn yogurt into butter, as Mother Yasoda did at the Franklin Shores farm. A nice way to begin. And this is for Stella, but it's from my heart. I'm very impressed with Irene, your daughter. You know, she's the expert here now among the other girls. So it really brings out her devotional side. I mean, she stands out as like someone who's very cultured and mature. Really does. really does. So that's nice. So as Sangha is like a family, sometimes I share the stories of the Sangha members that come here. Now, on a little bit more of a sober note, I did this on Wednesday. I was going to speak about this today, too. Srila Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj passed away. And I was very, very happy to see that in the temple, in the new Balaram Hall, which is a very nice hall, where the old Prasadam Hall used to be, they had a function for Narayan Maharaj. And I was very, very happy to attend it. And also very, very happy to speak. It means this picture was on a Vyasasan. There were garlands and flowers. There was Pushpanjali. There was Arti. And there were talks. It wasn't that well attended, but the fact that they had it, and those who did have some sentiment were able to express that sentiment, And I spoke, and I made a point that I feel really strongly about. And I read this in a book I'm reading called Follow the Angels by Srila Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj. And he was talking about, in relationship with even the spiritual master, ordinary dealings are not as important as the inspired side. It's not that ordinary dealings can be crooked, but there's subtleties, that's not where we look for our ultimate perfection, But the inspired side, the flow of Krishna that's manifesting through that person to us to bring us back to Godhead, that's what's important. And I explain that naturally, institutions have a function and a purpose. They have a function and a purpose. They socialize values, and they share teaching. And therefore, Prabhupada established an institution, and even in my own way, I support that institution still, whatever unusual relationship I may have with it. I understand it, and I support and I respect those people that maintain it. But anytime you have an institution, there's also going to be frailties in their dealings. It's just natural the way institutions work. It's not an excuse, but it's a fact of life. And there's so many reasons for it, because sometimes the institution becomes one of the values of the religion, and sometimes it supersedes the principles of the religion, and so many things happen, and to keep it secure. And then the Narayan Maharaj also had an institution, and they clashed. So I told the people that and people took practical decisions what they felt to protect their institutions, and hopefully it wasn't with malice or envy or offense. But I cleared that out right at the beginning. I said, now I want to speak about his inspired side. And I spoke about his inspired side, what I knew before these conflicts arose, and how many God brothers and God sisters and devotees helped in Krishna consciousness that were feeling lost at a very difficult time. When some of their shelters disappointed them, I talked about his service and affection for ISKCON, which is legitimate, and his humility. Where many times he said, "I wish I could serve my Guru Maharaj as you're serving your Guru Maharaj." Seeing the work that the Prabhupada and his mission was doing, and I also talked about personal good instructions that he helped me. One is when I was about to take sannyas. At that time, there was the zonal acharya system in ISKCON, which means you basically have to take initiation, whether it was first, second, or sannyas, from the person whose zone you were serving in. But the problem I had is that when I was about to take sannyas, I didn't although I very, very much liked the GDC I worked under as a manager, I thought he was fantastic. And to this day, I think he was probably the best leader I ever worked under in terms of a managerial way. Fantastic. But I didn't respect his renunciation. But I was being told that sannyasi is just a formality. It doesn't matter who you take from. So I remember I went to Narayan Maharaj and explained the situation. And I said, but if any, it's just a formality. And he said to me, there are no formalities in Vaishnava relationships. You should take from the person who inspires you the most in renunciation. And I took sannyas from Srila Satyajit Maharaj, who more exemplified for me the ideals that I was seeking in that. And there's many, many other examples. I also explained that in the early days, people don't know what it was like 25 years ago in ISKCON. Whatever the case is, you know, we had Guru Nishtha, and even Narayan Maharaj, he so much appreciated that Guru Nishtha. The foundations of humility and service that Prabhupada was able to instill in the hearts of their disciples, his disciples. Which really, and I remember one time, you know, and I explained part of his service, you know, he went to Bombay. You know, because in the court case, where Prabhupada's son was suing ISKCON for the assets of ISKCON, and I also explained how Krishna doesn't encourage nepotism in spiritual lives, seminal secessions, especially, you know, so there's many, many examples how the sons are disqualified. Prabhupada's sons weren't qualified to take, you know, his legacy, and Krishna arranged that. But his oldest son was very, very heavy, and he sued ISKCON to get the legacy of... to get, the, you know, it's done. So, and he had legal rights, except in, the son had legal rights except in one circumstance. And that's if the father took sannyas. The Prabhupada's will was ambiguous, so there was a question. So they needed the Narayan Maharaj to testify because he performed the sannyas, the yajna. He just left everything and went to Bombay many, many times. And that meant he had to travel in 1 hour from the temple and sit in the court, sometimes not in the court, but in another room, just because, you know, he can't, and not, you know, waiting to testify. So, you know, he really was willing to make sacrifice. So there was an inspired side to serve Prabhupada and serve ISKCON and served the devotees. That was very, very glorious. But when he was in the temple once, he saw the Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was very puzzled because he wasn't standing before Radharasa Bihari. He was standing before Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman. So he was wondering, he's a Gaudiya Vaishnava. It's okay to have those deities for preaching. But why is he always before those deities praying? So Narayan Maharaj went over to him and asked him, and said, why are you praying to Lord Ram? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I'm not praying to Lord Ram. I'm praying to his weapons. I'm praying to his weapons. And then Narayan Maharaj knew what he meant. Because the main person to defend ISKCON was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, because the case was that he actually hoodwinked the assets of ISKCON. And he saw Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You can imagine Tamal Krishna Maharaj being trying to be attacked by a lawyer when his mind starts shooting back, you know, and it's for Prabhupada's service. So he was amazed to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj on that stand, right? So when Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that, he looked around at all the devotees, he said, I learned Guru Nishtha from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So he had that story. But I also explained, you don't know, 25, 30 years ago, we never knew even what a manjari was. And we were gurus. we didn't know what a manjari was. And, you know, I know a lot of my teaching, two things, the personal dealings, I actually saw from him how a spiritual leader can be very personal and affectionate in a very nice way. And also all the knowledge I got, I was able to share because we were going there and hear very nice things. And he was very, very detached. He didn't want anything. But also in Parikram, we didn't know, we go to Karakadamba, but before he took us, Kamal Krishnamurti, Bhojan, introduced myself, all the, before he took us one day, and we went through, at that time you couldn't get to it, we went through the water with the thorns underneath, and had to get there. No one could get to it. No one knew where these places were. And I can go on and on, but, he took us from bus and all the Gurukul and then a Prikram, a nice thing. So I was able in that way to speak about his inspired side without negating the conflicts that were there in the ordinary dealings in relationship to institutional matters and people taking practical stands in behalf of their own guru's mission and things like that. That doesn't throw me off. Anyway, I was able to say that. And then also I think very, 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 very important too is Mother Rasa Jha. She passed away on December 28th last year. And she was one of the dearest members of our Sangha. And I see Carl here. I know he was close with her too. And, you know, so many people that, you know, the heart of a Vaishnava. You know, and what is the heart of a Vaishnava? It's not about you, it's about others. There's no sense of self-aggrandizement. There's no disturbance of taking a humble position. There's no pushing yourself to the front. There's no envy and critical nature and disturbance and everything. It's, you know, egotistic nature. When you put your desires in front, and you see things as objects of your desire, it creates all material inebrities. And it's very, very, very rare as a person that sees themselves not as the seer, the enjoyer, but the seeing, to be enjoyed, to render service. And there are very, very rare people that have achieved and attained that consciousness. And those people are loved by everyone. And sometimes it's only after they pass away and everyone shares notes that you start to realize that this was an extremely extraordinary person. And extraordinary means ordinary. Because the people who try to be extraordinary are ordinary, and the people who try to be ordinary are extraordinary. You know, so when you see a person who's not disturbed, not being on top, you know, satisfied to be a humble servant of Krishna, and actually living that life and touching people's hearts. So I know personally, really, she was one of my dearest godbrother, godsisters. She encouraged me in such a way, even though I actually considered her a superior, really I did. You know, writing me on Vyas Puja, encouraged me, you know, so many ways. And we do miss her greatly. I was just thinking, I did this drama in Govardhan with Alex, and I had my drama group called the Monk and the Thespian. It really worked out good. There were 150 people. I was just seeing how I'd like to share it with her. Not only share it with her, but share her the formula we gave where we could do a really good job with just two people. You don't have to get a lot of people to rehearse. So, you know, her destination is assured. But it's really sad that, you know, there's people that pass away, they're good people, and, you know, you respect it, but there's people that somehow were a part of your life, either gave you a portion of love or service or, you know, enlivened you in ways, and that's when it's difficult. So we can all just remember her. And by remembering her, hopefully imbibe the qualities she had in our own lives so that we can also perfect our lives and develop that kind of heart that's free from envy. And if anybody else, before I read the Beit Bhagavatam, if they would just like to say something, you're just welcome to unmute your phone and do so. I don't know if I expect it or not, but I would afford that opportunity.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Jainita here.
Hi, Bob.
Thanks so much for sharing about Rasa Gyalwada. What a wonderful person. I'm just looking at her deities now. She was she'd had conversations with Sevapriya many years ago that she said when I can no longer worship my deities, I'll give them to you. And you know, Sevapriya thought and we thought that would be kind of like in our old age, just because of Rasa's, she was so healthy and vibrant, and just lived a kind of sattvic life that you just kind of assume is a long life, but you don't know, and there's obviously a kind of warning there for all of us. But her mood that you described is so kind of just pervasive of her personality. You know, you hit it right on the head of how Vaishnav, you know, always puts others first, and her just her genuine humility of not like this kind of showy humility that you know kind of sometimes we see, but just like the humility of empowering others and of learning from others and you know, and taking shelter of others. It was, I remember, you know, you were saying you thought of her as a superior. I remember one time we were kind of reconfiguring our altar, and I was trying to find a picture. I had this sort of double frame of you and Guna Grimaraj, and I was trying to find it, and I couldn't, and we ended up having to do something else. And only later, when I went to Rasa's, I saw it. It was there on her altar. Because, you know, she had respect for the devotees that we had respect for, and saw that you know, we're getting something, and she was so inspired by that, and then looked to the same people that we were looking to for inspiration and for guidance. And this reminds me of one other story. As I was thinking about that, I was thinking about her altar and how we just have her Radha Krishna deity. She had Prabhupada Murthy and Gorni Thai and all kinds of other, like a little Murthy of Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, and just these kind of little deities and pictures of you know, you and Guru Granth Maharaj, and I had this, she was, I can't even remember how it came up. Maybe she was saying, I was wondering how long it took her to do the puja or something like that. And she was explaining how she sort of worships each one of these, the gurus and I said, I was kind of, my mood was like, you don't really have to do that, kind of like the official, and she just kind of smiled and said, I know, but I like to. And that was just her, mood, so thank you, Maharaj.
Thanks a lot, Janice. I somehow dropped the call for about couple of minutes at the beginning, but one second, let me just... All right, Bill, can anybody hear me?
We can hear you, Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Okay. Okay, you can hear me. Somehow, the Guru Bhagavatamrita Katha kind of went to this, but I kind of feel like in our Sangha that people appreciate to also hear these kind of things, and it's kind of like the modern Srimad Bhagavatamrita. It's our modern search for those, who have the topmost level of Krishna's mercy. And the person who has the topmost level of Krishna's mercy is the person whose heart is infused with humility and service, And those are the people that we want to associate with. Those are the people we want to hear about. And that's how we advance in spiritual life. Okay. Anybody else like to say anything?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Maharaj. Hi,
yes?
Krishna.
Yes.
Maharaj.
Who's that?
I'm sorry. This is Melissa from Austin. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm in a car, so I know I might be loud. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to say thank you so much for speaking about Mother Rasagya. I wasn't expecting that on the call today, but she's just been in my heart so much lately, and it seems not a day goes by where I don't have some situation where I think, what would Rasa do? and I feel like
thank
she
you.
Still guides me so much. And so thank you so much for speaking about her.
Thank you, Melissa. That's so nice. Someone in Austin car, driving the car, saying how much they remember. Yeah, thank you. Gail, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I'm happy to get this opportunity to share how Mother Rasagya left a legacy in my own spiritual life because we had an interchange that led to her being inspired to send me via email a verse by Haridas Thakur. And she didn't know that, I have a practice of tagging him onto the end of the, Panchatattva prayer, instead of five for me, it's six, that's my daily practice. And she didn't know that. Yet she had sent me this verse by Haridas Thakur, and I was very happy to receive it because now I had something, more substantial by which to, remember him. And so to this day, the verse that she sent me, I memorized it as soon as she gave it to me. And to this day, it's a part of my
daily. Can you repeat the verse?
Yes. Kripa kari tamarube, tavarube, amara jivaya, nirantara nache prabhu, dhari tavapaya. It means, basically, Oh, my Lord, please be merciful to me and appear on my tongue in the form of your holy name. Dance there constantly. I fall at your feet and beg you. And when I responded to her, I let her know that, I something about wishing that I had the proper pronunciation, but I wasn't asking her for it. But she sent back, the full out verse, an extended version of the verse, and she didn't have a computer that had the diacritics and everything. And so I was just really impressed by the fact that she took the time to use, the regular letters to explain, which letters got the long vowel, which letters got the, in other words, she had to do, a lot of work to make up for the fact that her computer didn't have diacritics, And she did that for every line, and I just thought that I was just impressed by how she extended herself, in that way. So because that verse is part of my daily sadhana, in that way, I remember her, on a daily basis.
It's so nice hearing about Vaishnavi, because it puts a mirror up to your own heart in comparison. And if you're sincere, you'll pray to be like them. And you'll admit you're not. So it's a very, very wonderful thing to do that. Anybody else? I mean, it's somehow going with this flow today.
Maharaj?
Yeah, maybe?
Maharaj? Haribol, I am also driving, but I'm about to get home. Do you hear me all right, Maharaj?
I can. Yeah.
There's two things that came to mind, and thanks so much for speaking about rasa. One thing I'd like to just follow up with something Jayana Tai said, or actually, my spiritual master would often quote his mother. Ravindrasarupa would often quote his mother, who would say, if there's something like, if there's room in your heart, then there's room in the home. In other words, like if people say, like, oh, do you have room? Can you take care of me? Can I sleep over? I need help or whatever. He'd say the real issue is whether there's room in your heart or not, not whether there's room in your home. And I feel like with rasa, one thing that she often showed, and I like the way Jayana Tai put it, it wasn't a certain kind of showy humility, but rasa genuinely enjoyed taking care of people. I mean, it made her happy in ways where I find, I'm so conditioned that I generally...
One second. Moni?
Sure.
Moni?
Sure.
Just pause here. I just want to say, there's an audience here. He was quoting his guru said, when there's room in the heart, there's room in the home. Like if someone comes over, it's not space, it's whether your heart. But he's actually relating this in terms of Mother Rasa Jha, her genuine humility and desire to serve others, which is expansive. Go ahead, yeah.
And so I guess when I look at myself, I find that I have people who I care about, and then generally everyone else I see with kind of a benevolent hope not to be bothered. That's kind of the conditioning I find. And I think that, with rasa, it was real Bhagavad Dharma in the sense that her desire to serve, and to serve in a sense that was infused with Krishna, was really spontaneous. And so, I don't know, on one hand, that's been something that has been in my mind today, but also the last few days. But another thing, too, I was hoping to mention really quick is that I think, and I remember thinking about this when she passed away, but I don't know if we spoke about it, but sometimes you can make a distinction between being innocent and being experienced. I mean, famously, William Blake wrote two volumes of poetry, Songs of Innocence and Songs of Experience, where the idea is there's something about them which distinguishes the two radically. You're innocent, but then you undergo experience. Okay, good, but you're no longer innocent anymore. And I think that Rasa always struck me as someone who was both innocent and experienced. And I think she was innocent in the sense that
one
she...
One second.
Yeah, sure.
One second.
Sure.
He was quoting... His Carl's an English professor, so they appreciate this. He was quoting William Blake, something about innocence and experience. He's familiar with it. And that when you become experienced, you lose your innocence. But he was saying with Rasa, she had the quality of being innocent but never losing her experience.
And yeah, I'm
sharing that with Carl, because he's a professor and he knows William Blake. Rasa, he knows Rasa too. Yeah.
And so I think that she really did have a childlike heart in the sense that Rasa delighted in fun and pleasure. And I don't mean this in an offensive way, pleasure, but just she had a very light heart. And yet she was an incredibly experienced person who experienced firsthand a lot of the kind of miseries and challenges of life. I mean, she described to me how when she was a little kid, her family trying to escape Berlin from bombing. You know, and she was an incredibly experienced person. And I don't know, I think that in ways, I think that, you know, our group, Maharaj, and I think in some ways we were innocent, and then when we kind of got disillusioned, we became experienced, but in some sense, we're all somewhat jaded. And I think that Rasa is a good patron saint for us,
I think you should make a picture of her and hand it to all your friends. I think it would be a great sadhana, right?
It would be. She was someone where, I don't know. I don't want to, and Marge, I don't want to take too much time here, so I wouldn't, you know.
That's okay. It's wonderful to think too.
But, you know,
as long as I can stop occasionally and give Carl a few drops.
But I don't know. I'd be interested. I mean, I imagine John and Ty may feel like this too. I personally feel very grateful to Krishna that he allowed us to become extremely close with Rasa toward the end of her life. And I didn't expect that. You know, we just moved to Austin because it was good for my career trajectory. And you had mentioned at the time there's this gem of a devotee, Rasa Gya, there, and I knew that we'd meet her in some way. But we ended up becoming extremely close very quickly. And there's ways in which, we opened up a lot, and I think that Rasa shared the frustrations that we had about being kind of dislocated spiritually in certain ways and things like that. And yet, her attitude, while she wasn't foolish, she wasn't like a devotee who thought, well, I can't have a view on this because whatever. No, she had a clear picture of things that, but her response was just to try to serve in her capacity. What can you do? She just did her best to serve in her capacity and leave the rest up to Krishna. And so I don't know. I just I don't know. I appreciate you know, you're allowing us to speak about her. May I just say one more really quick thing, Marge? Would that be all right? One more short thing?
Yeah, sure.
Just to follow up on, you know, Jainatai made a point that Rasa had a certain humility, where, like, she would, like, she also asked me, like, I had a picture of my guru, and she said, well, I'd like to put it on my altar, too. And I think part of it was that she genuinely looked to serve and learn from her god brothers and god sisters. I also think Rasa had a real sense of spiritual family, and I think that if someone she loved someone else, well, then she'd love them, too. That's just the kind of person she was. And so, what I wanted to add to that was, and this is something Jainatai said to me personally in a conversation, Rasa's humility was also that she, without being mental, she would learn from anybody. And a large number of times, Rasa would, like, just, like, go to us, like Janet Tai or me or my wife or whomever, and just defer to our opinion. She just, if she thought it sounded right, great, I accept it. And in ways where, you know, she didn't even have to go through some kind of formal procedure of saying, well, I know that, you know, I'm senior and you're a junior, but I'm going to condescend and learn from you. It was just natural. It was, again, it was unfiltered by her mind. She just wanted to take refuge in the truth wherever she found it. And that would often mean coming from younger people, less experienced people, and less spiritually realized people. So anyway, I mean, we could go on a long time. Like it says about the Bible, you know, if you had to write all the books, you wouldn't be able to finish or whatever. So I feel like with Rasa, if one had to tell all the stories, you wouldn't be able to finish. I don't know. See, other stories are coming to mind now. So I'll stop now, Maharaj, and if other people have something to say. But
well, thank you. I'm not sure we'll have too many more people now, but not that you took more time. I think it's just very beautiful. And I'm really hearing this, and I'm really becoming inspired to try to develop that level of humility, because that's what bhakti is about. In the morning for an hour, I got this book. I really like it, Following the Angels by Prabhupada's godbrother. It's Bhakti Siddhanta's mood was to develop that consciousness. He's very heavy on developing that consciousness of humility. Not thinking that this is just A, B, C, but thinking that this is the super essence. Not usually, you talk about these things at the beginning and then you go on higher things, but this is what makes higher things, is this humility. And, you know, it was so, he was speaking and he was saying, you have to come to the consciousness where there is no subservience to you. Rather, you are the lowest. But in the real, it comes from experience. The experience is if you experience the infinite, then your finite nature is revealed. As long as you don't experience the infinite, then your finite nature is exaggerated. Your self-conception is exaggerated. But it's not that position. He said if you make the custody char, impartial judgment, that is the most glorious position, because that is the position of love. Love has nothing to do with size or position. So that's the position of love. And even though you feel that way, you're also feeling love. You may feel, I am low, I am wretched. It's not a psychological thing. It's an experience of God's glories and your true sense. Because God is the positive. He's everything. And we're nothing without God. And therefore, if we look at ourselves in an objective way, we have nothing except God. And then when we have God, we have everything. And therefore, we can give everything. So this type of consciousness and position is really what Bhakti Siddhanta taught. I'm really appreciating it more and more when I'm reading Sridhar Maharaj's books now, or just this one book I'm discussing with some devotees. Some people are over it. They're kind of intellectual types, and this is a good discussion for them. But to read that actually this is what's coming through our lives, you know. And hearing about a devotee like that is just so nice, you know. And it's humbling, and it leads to our aspiration and prayers. So we didn't get to the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita today, but we got to the modern Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. Because the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita is what? It's, what is the first thing called, the first book called, is finding the essence of the Supreme Lord's mercy. So we went on our own modern-day journey today. And we talked about certain things that are really inspiring. From farm girls from Iowa. Not farm girls, but in their family, that's what they do there, and coming down. Some of them are going to pre-med. They're very pious people, educated, good students. Just seeing how the mercy of Srila Prabhupada is just so pervasive everywhere, you know, and how it comes to people in certain ways. And then, of course, talking about, you know, a servant of Sri Chaitanya's mission for so many years, Narayan Maharaj, and his inspired side, you know. And then, of course, speaking about Rasa Gya, who's touched many's hearts. So we had kind of a modern-day search. And I guess the message is we have to continue the legacy by becoming that, by, you know, becoming inspired in spiritual life. Would anybody else like to say hello today? Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisance.
Nanda Dula, wonderful hearing these things, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm so happy. Nanda Dula, every time. Nanda Dula, always come hearing this Sangha. So that gives me my own sense of gratification that, you know, people are, you know, we have a Sangha, regular people that find it important enough to reserve that time to exchange. And good. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Hello?
Thank you, Maharaj, for what you said about Irene.
Okay, I'll tell
you. It made my heart swell with love. I'm so happy.
Thank you. What I said about Irene, it made my heart swell with love. Carl is also filled with love. And what other people noticed also, you know, because I've given their group, my assistant, this, you know, a very nice girl, and she's doing a great job helping them. She's a devotee that lives here.
Yeah.
I mean, she's so animated. It's like unreal almost, right? She's practically a living drama. But she was just noticing how nice it is, how much Irene loves her father. Despite the New York roster that goes on, too. Which,
yeah,
I also can appreciate. But in between that. Okay, thank you, Stella.
Hi, people. Okay. Maharaj.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Govardhan Bhattugas.
Govardhan, Hare Krishna. Yay. It's nice, huh, to hear about all these things and all these nice devotees and being part of this kind of Sangha. This is modern day Sangha. This is the closest we come to living in the same village. Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry, Hare Bhau. You would have been so happy, Henry, to see this transition that Carl engineered through Krishna's mercy. How they all finely dressed. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Maharaj, Kunagraha Goswami here.
Hey, Maharaj. Wow. Are you still at the Shastras?
Still am. Thanks so much for that inspiring hour.
Wow, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on it. That's inspiring to me. Yeah.
You're always hitting the nail on the head, so.
Well, I thank you. But, you know, Guru Maharaj, it was such ecstasy sitting down there and seeing 10, you know, American girls and one guy, you know, just seeing them just in these sarees and Punjabis, just like, and that's what I love about kind of, quote, preaching in Vrindavan, Because what you couldn't do in a lifetime with a person, you can do here in 3 days.
You can, anyway.
24 hours a day. Anyone can. appreciating the Vrindavan mood coming into their hearts, you know? And I didn't do anything. I gave them one assistant, and she was great. Even they loved it. She took them down to the boats, and then she argued with the boatman, and then she walked away with the whole group and had the boatman coming begging to come back in the boat, you know, and then they went out on the boat, and they saw these things, you know. You know, this is in our life, so to see this kind of transformation. And it's only day three. They're here for 2 weeks.
Oh, amazing.
They're here for 3 weeks. And they have service at Rupa's school.
Oh,
so
great.
Now they're going out to the villages. You know, tomorrow they're going out to the villages. And who knows, maybe they'll come every day to my class. But it's interesting because my class, I'm discussing Ramananda Sambhava. You know,
oh,
we just got to the part where Ramananda Roy said, like, you know, this is the limit of perfection, Lord Chaitanya. No one has spoken so high before, you know. I've never gone so high before. And then Lord Chaitanya says, go on, go further. And as I'm saying that, you know, we're just about to discuss a verse from Gita Govinda, right, about Radharani, and I, you know, because if you see the way, I see everyone that's coming in, because my back is to the window of the pathway that they come. You know, like, you can't miss like 12 people coming. So I look at the group who's there for the class. They said, anyway, you ain't speaking anymore than subject, right? You know, then when they came in, you know, I completely changed the side. I said, you know, we were discussing, you know, basically, you know, I changed it to an ordinary subject, and I said that this is about to have a kirtan. And then after, I spent time with them, and just to see, and some of these people, when you couldn't see it in the dungarees, but you see it when they're bright in Vrindavan with saris, flowers in their hair, Punjabis. You know, and then actually see how pious. I tell people also, because there's some people that are very close to me, Croatians, you know. Americans are pious. Mm-hmm. Americans believe in God. They just got screwed up a little bit culturally. But Americans believe in God. And it's just really, and people have an impression of Americans. They think everyone is like the Simpsons and the Seinfelds and the, you know, whatever these comedies that they do, which is how people in New York are. You know, but there's a rest of America, and you know, even people there that are very, very pious, I say these people have faith. If you just speak about God in the right way, and I tell everybody here, you know, Americans believe in God. That's it. Americans just believe in God, and it's, you know, it's. There's something about the country, you know. I mean, Prabhupada came there.
Right.
In God we trust, and, you know, and Prabhupada came there, you know. And there's some, you know, piety there. And it just has to have the proper presentation. But, you know, I usually go to bed about 7:30, you know. And when I give a class like this, like, I can't explain it. It's like turning on an airplane propel, you know, and you shut off the engine. It doesn't sleep so quickly. But I have a nice schedule where I wake up in the morning and write. I just finished the last another article called Nam Kirtan, The Essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And so I just don't write in the morning, you know, so I don't miss anything like that. You can see right now I'm completely jacked up for you know, speaking and things like that. Okay, so Haribo, glory to Prabhupada.
Haribo, glory to Prabhupada. Thank you.